views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Pokornik, host of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, a podcast focused on helping you remember who you really are, awaken to what you already know, and trust that you are absolutely perfect for the role of being you. My goal is to help you realign with your vibrant, powerful self so that you can fully enjoy the life you've come here to live. Today, I want to share more ideas about how you can quiet your inner critic, because this is an ongoing and challenging task. Really, we can never have too many tools for something like this. Quieting this voice, or at least changing what she's saying, is really important to helping a person move out of their shadow and into their power. So, if you want to be a vibrant, powerful person, you'll need to have this under control. Another reason this is a good thing to do is your inner critic was formed when you were young. It came about as a result of things people said to you, how they treated you, the overall sense of self-worth that you developed as a result of all that. This means that if you're a parent, teacher, coach, grandparent, etc., what you're saying to the young people in your life right now is helping them form their own self-talk, their own inner critic for later in their lives. Depending on how strong your influence is in their life, you are affecting how critical they may be to themselves and even how much they nag others. Whew, talk about a weight on our shoulders, hey? Yikes. I know it's tough to accept, but it's definitely worth being aware of and giving some thought to so that you can use this information to guide you. If you're critical a lot, this is a good chance of sticking with them, and perhaps for it even to be your voice that they hear when they later put themselves down. How would you like to be remembered? For me, it's not like that. So while this voice will always be with you, I truly believe that it's impossible to tune her out completely or turn her right off. You can set limits and provide guidance around what is okay to say. So who is she? In case you're totally new to the idea of an inner critic, or if you just need a refresher about it, your inner critic is the voice inside of your head, which reminds you of any past failings, real or imagined. They might suggest that you're crazy to take risks or to try new things. It's that voice that tries to hold you back. Now, your inner critic is tightly tied to your ego, and as a result, it often comes from a place of fear. So it doesn't do this to be mean or cruel. It really does come from a place of fear, a fear of rejection, fear of getting hurt, fear of embarrassment, fear of losing something. In other words, your inner critic thinks that it's protecting you. Now, she's not speaking the truth. She's spouting a story with just enough memory connection to make you believe what she's saying. Most of us are aware that when it comes to sharing data, it's very easy for a person to manipulate the facts to fit the outcome that they want. This is basically what the inner critic is a pro at. What she is saying might sound like the truth because of the memories that she's linking to, but there's definitely some embellishment and massaging of facts going on there. And your critic loves to jump in when self-doubt, uncertainty, worry, guilt, or fear are around, as well as when you're feeling embarrassed, disappointed, hurt, or angry. It's kind of like a ringleader to those feelings, working to rile them up and making it even harder for you to come through that moment in life in a healthy way. Now, if this isn't bad enough, she can also pipe up when you're feeling good, when you're feeling happy, proud, purposeful, in the zone. In this case, she might pull up memories tied to a similar time where things ended up not working out, or she might just make it up totally from scratch. So, for example, let's say that you curl competitively, and a few years ago, your team was in the finals to win your provincial title. You were up by 5 coming home. The game was virtually in the bag when everything just sort of fell apart. Your second missed an easy takeout, allowing the other team a chance to put another rock in play. Your third's weight was off and fell short of the house, and one of your rocks was burned or touched by another player, and it had to be taken off without allowing it to hit any of the rocks it was supposed to hit. To make a long, sad story short, the other team ended up scoring 6 and beating you. Now, years later, with way more experience under your belt, you're back in the finals. Although you're much more self-assured at this point in your life, you can hear that nagging little voice popping up in your head. Hope it doesn't end like the last one. You better play it super safe. You can't do a takeout. What if she misses? How embarrassing it would be to lose again. Instead of feeling confident and ready to finish the game like the pro that you are, you start to feel shaky and filled with doubt simply because the inner critic has piped up. Even if she doesn't have this past failure to pull upon, she can still create insecurities by attaching it to other situations in your life. For example, she might start with a simple cliche like, careful not to count your chickens before they hatch. It all comes down to your shot. What if you miss the broom completely? Look at all those people watching. Did you see what happened to, you know, and insert another curling champ's name here that happened to mess up and miss their shot? I sure wish you'd had a better night's sleep last night. Being up all night with a baby isn't going to help your game. None of these things have anything to do with the game that you're playing in reality. But the inner critic can be quite relentless in taking you down a notch if you allow her to speak freely. Now, sometimes this voice will sound like someone you know, a parent, a teacher, even yourself. And other times it's just a voice. So becoming aware of your inner critic is the first step to taking back your power from this invisible force. So let's talk about how you put the critic in her place. Once you recognize that this voice is there and that it's not helping you, your next step is to figure out ways to quiet it down. I like to call mine by name, not a real name of someone that I know, even though that voice might sound awfully familiar. And the reason for that is because it gives that person undue power, even when they're not around. It can also cause unnecessary damage to the relationship. So even though you might feel like the damage has already been done, it's not fair to attach more of a burden to it. To show you what I mean, let's imagine that you think of your inner critic as your mother. Maybe you even call her that. Using the curling example, what if you end up losing as a result of that pesky critic? Where do you think you're going to focus your anger? I'm guessing at good old mom, who, while she might be in the stands, didn't actually have anything to do with your loss. Your critic is not your mother, but a voice that you feed and control. So if you decide you like the idea of choosing a name, try to make it something that is fitting, but not connected to someone you know in real life. I call mine Maggie, which is also what I used to call my GPS in my car. That's where it came from, and it just seemed to fit. The character in my book, Standing in Your Power, Jane, she calls her critic snarky, and it is a snarky one. And I've had other clients use names like Minion, Lucy, which was short for Lucifer, Yikes, Parrot, and so on. So to make our conversation easier, I'm going to use the nickname wannabe for the inner critic examples in this podcast, but it's totally up to you to choose whatever name you want, or maybe you'll decide you don't want to give it a name at all. Totally up to you. The second part to putting her in place, once you've become aware of her and whether or not you've decided to name her, is to set boundaries. Now, basically, this is exactly like it is with kids, except that I'm going to give you some fun ways to respond if she doesn't listen, which are definitely not meant for you to use with your kids. Okay, let me be very clear on that. We set boundaries by having clear expectations and communicating those thoughts with others. In this case, you're setting this up with your inner critic, the voice in your head. So you don't have to share these expectations with anyone else, although you might do that if a teachable moment arises with, say, your child, and you feel it would be a good thing to share. The third step is to enforce the boundaries. The actual details of this are up to you, but basically, this means that you're going to correct wannabe when she speaks harshly, puts you down, or tries to make you doubt yourself. The conversation can happen in your head because you could wind up with a diagnosis if you have the conversation out loud. And it can be anything from an explanation to a command to stop. So when Naggy starts up or wannabe starts up, I can say to her, wannabe, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. There's another little cliche we know. I could also just say, enough, stop, quiet. You're going to want to practice this in your regular everyday life so that when you're in a high stress situation, like say the curling game, it's already familiar to you and wannabe. Plus, wannabe's already familiar with the rules. If you try to introduce this only in those intense moments, wannabe won't listen. And even if you got her to quiet down, you're still distracted and in danger of bringing down your performance as a result. The fourth step is to get creative. If it feels too difficult to tell her to stop or to, you know, tell her, instruct her that if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all, that kind of thing, maybe because she just isn't listening and your imagination is a strong one, then you might want to put your creativity to work in order to bring her under control. For example, you could draw a picture of her in your mind or on paper, doesn't matter. And then you could add a clown nose or Dumbo ears that she has to wear when she's misbehaving. Now remember, this is enforcing your boundaries with your inner critic. Do not use these with your child. You could also pretend that you have a volume button, and then you could turn it way down or even mute it when needed. You could give her a Goofy or a Mickey Mouse voice, or even in extreme circumstances, you could see her sitting on your shoulder, you know, like they used to do in the cartoons where they had the little angel and the little devil, and then you could just flick it off your shoulder when she won't listen and be quiet. This exercise is actually about taking back your power, and it's similar to a tool that I would use with kids who are being teased or name-called, and they're making it worse by reacting. It's not about creating a battle with wannabe. That tends to escalate things in a bad way. It's about taking back some of your power by asserting your own creativity. The fifth step is to release it. Another great tool to have is one that you can use when wannabe is bringing up strong feelings that are tied to an actual memory. Rather than try to ignore them or stuff them away, you can use the information to let you know this memory is carrying an emotional charge. Now, if that's the case, you might want to use some of the tools that you've already learned in these podcasts to release the hold this memory has on you. One way you can do this is to close your eyes and notice where those feelings are sitting in your body. Go there with your mind. You know, if you can feel the embarrassment deep in your belly, send your awareness deep into your belly as well. Or you can simply set your hand on your belly, because as soon as you touch there, you automatically bring your awareness there. Okay, so sometimes if my brain just doesn't want to work with me and let go, it's too firmly in my head, I'll use my hand and let's say whatever it is in my solar plexus, I'll put my fingers on my solar plexus and I'll just lightly tap to bring myself there and to acknowledge that that's where the space that I'm dealing with. Notice any thoughts, memories, pictures, or anything else that comes up. As they come up, acknowledge them. You can acknowledge them by simply saying, oh, okay, interesting. Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that. I see you. I recognize you. And then just let them go. You might do this by visualizing a cord or maybe several attached to them, and you might actually see yourself cutting the cord. You can use a sword or scissors or whatever you want to do that. You could watch them drift off like a balloon or disintegrate into nothing or maybe burn up in a fire. You might see yourself at a younger age and see yourself hurt by this situation. So then take this younger you, visualize yourself pulling her onto your knee, hug her, soothe her, let her know she's safe and that she doesn't need to deal with this, that you, the adult, the bigger person, is going to deal with it. The bigger, stronger, and fully capable you can handle it as soon as the little you lets it go. If a different person appears from that memory, you can ask them if there's anything else they want to share with you or anything they want to give you. You don't need to pull them onto your knee or hug them or anything, but just ask them if there's something more you need to learn from that experience or if there's something more they want to tell you or share with you. And if they give you something, just accept it. Even if you can't really see what it is, just accept it, thank them, and watch them disappear. Later, you could journal about whatever they gave you and it might show itself to you. You can ask questions like, what did that thing mean, whatever it was? And it's amazing the kind of stuff that will come to light as long as you trust that what is coming to you is truly good information. In every case, when you let something go, you want to fill the area that memory used with light, love, or compassion. So when you let something go, you actually want to fill it up with something healing, something beautiful. Light or love, even compassion, can come from the divine. You can see a gold liquid going in, or a blue liquid, or a white liquid, or whatever makes sense to you and feels pure and beautiful and loving. If you feel like a piece of you has been stuck in this memory, it might take a bit of time and lots of loving energy to actually get it moving, but keep at it until the memory loses its power and you feel whole once again. When there's no memory, or maybe you hate visualizing, another option is to go into debate mode. Stand your ground and point out every single thing that you can think of that pokes holes in the story that wannabe is trying so hard to sell. In debate mode, you don't take things personally or attack the other person, even if you've seen some of that in the political games. That's not the way to do it, all right? If you have a nagging feeling that your opponent may be right, don't give in, because they're not. It's a fabricated story based on little tiny pieces of the truth. So there's lots of places to poke holes. Once reasonable doubt has been created, the inner critic will naturally quiet down. The seventh step with the inner critic that I want to share is to assign it a task. Your inner critic is part of your team. She's there and will be at her best when her boundaries are clearly outlined and enforced. Now, I don't know about you, because I've never been inside anyone else's head. But I know that Nagi gets bored if she doesn't have anything to do, and a bored inner critic is a nuisance. So I give her a task. Her job is to be my number one cheerleader and coach. She's allowed to encourage, to pat me on the back, to remind me to stay objective, to point out when I'm escalating, etc. It took me a while to train her in this, but after a few months of practice, she really embraced it. Of course, I had to help her learn to let go of anything and everything critical, which is not an easy task for either of us, and to teach her some ways to build me up. She's not perfect, and neither am I, But for the most part, I know she's on my team. And when she has a bad day, I'm reminded that it's me who needs to slow down, to be compassionate, and to investigate, rather than just blunder on through, leaving damaged relationships in my wake. In conclusion, believe in yourself. Know that you are perfect at being you and that you are on a unique and special journey. Nobody else will ever be able to walk a mile in your exact shoes, and nobody else will ever fully understand what you must do to reach your full potential, except maybe wannabe, who has a front row seat to who you are becoming and a natural ability to help you get there. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Have you ever worked in a corporation where the staff is pitted against each other in an effort to make them work harder? People are compared on a continual basis and competition is fierce. It's that dog-eat-dog environment where everyone must watch their own back. This is a common scenario in our society and one that's not often challenged. Frequently, men in an environment such as this will say that they'd prefer a group of egotistical males over working with a group of competitive women any day. Why? Because women are very creative, adaptive, and tuned into others. We're quick to figure out how to manipulate, undermine, and hurt our opponent. Jealousy, backstabbing, and vindictive mind games can arise in this kind of environment, creating a place where nobody trusts, feels safe, or is willing to take a risk. In such an environment, the tough will survive and they'll rise to the top, but only by clawing their way up there. What happens, though, if we take a similar corporation and have this business value and promote a collaboration model instead? Assuming that their employees understand how collaboration, creativity, and connectivity interrelate in this model and have the skills for working within it, what sort of outcome would arise? Well, a balanced male would have no trouble doing his best work in this environment and would enjoy the harmony in the office. He would take pleasure in the healthy and fun competition that naturally surfaces among colleagues with no fear of underhandedness or lashing out. The females would excel as well. They would develop a strong support system with both the men and the women in the company. They would work together, backing each other up and putting their heads together for ultimate creativity sessions. The leaders in the crowd would immediately be recognized and encouraged to fully embrace that role. The rest of the group would feel nurtured and supported in exploring their strengths and improving their skills. In other words, everyone would naturally fall into the role that fits them best at the moment, while still feeling like an important and contributing member. No energy would be wasted on jealousy, backstabbing, revenge, or undermining. All of the staff would feel invested, supported, safe, and accepted. Doesn't this sound like a beautiful place to work? Hypothetically speaking, it is. And this corporation would be unstoppable. Since I wrote this in Standing in Your Power back in 2014, I actually think there are companies that are doing this, not because they read my book, but just because that's the shift that's happening right now. So I think we're actually starting to see corporations who are thinking this way and are striving for this kind of balance. Our reality, though, prior to that, and for so many corporations, is that we have so many unbalanced people that are struggling to understand why they just can't seem to find happiness, that a corporation would be hard-pressed to find the employees who are really ready for this model. Interestingly, though, if a business supports a system of collaboration and connection, and if leaders are ready and capable of promoting this model, they will be surprised at how quickly their staff adapt or voluntarily leave the environment. Most people will feel the pull towards balance as soon as they enter such a place, and they'll quickly realize that it's a great place for them to be. This same concept can be applied to families, committees, communities, and countries. If and when we're finally ready to start making these kinds of changes.